You're listening to the New Old Heads podcast, shot live every Tuesday at twitch.tv/newoldheads and released every Thursday at noon via bringingdowntheband.com. The show is brought to you by Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl. Support the show directly by becoming a member at patreon.com/newoldheads.
You're now tuned in to the New Old Heads podcast. I am Major Seventh, and we are once again whole. Whole crew is here. My man Jay Moore is in the building. Rocking his hometown gear. I see you. What's going on, sir?
You know, just you know, as always, you know, pick it but not high, flapping but can't fly.
A game I'm talking about. Well, guess who's back? I wish I had that. We could pump that song in the sound.
Scarface. Which one, the Mace one or the Scarface?
I need the Scarface one. We need to have that instrumental.
Is it a Beanie Sigel song too?
It actually is on Scarface album.
He's just featuring him.
Yeah, Jay Z and Beans is on that one. Yeah, I wish we could play the instrumental right now. Man, longevity is in the building. How are you, sir?
Yeah, kicking and flapping, flying and stuff. Nah, I'm doing all right, man.
You Thanks. Sound like you well rested, perhaps, or no? Did you catch up?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I mean, it wasn't like full on vacation for a month. It was trial and visiting and still working, you know. But it was just trying to do a lot of the work from not here.
A little different.
Yeah, it was remote. Different. It was just different, I think, more than anything. But yeah, it was good. It was good.
Hey, man. And glad you had a good time. Glad you could kick your feet up, literally, for a little bit.
Yeah, literally.
Let's talk Chuck D, man. OG, legend, hip-hop icon. He is calling for a ban on the N-word on Twitter.
All I got to do is jump in a time machine and go back a couple months.
Just a couple months?
Yeah, that's all it takes.
He says, yo,
look, not on the Twitter that I follow.
Hey, he said, yo, Elon Musk, the next thing Twitter should do is ban the N-word and the word. But he said, basically, he's saying, you know, to be banned. What do y'all think about that?
Absolutely not.
Why do you say absolutely not so fast?
First of all, I am a hard-carrying member of Black Twitter.
Oh, here we go.
Black Twitter.
Here we go.
Excuse me. And I'm just sorry, like, you know, I know it's not just us that are enjoying many of these moments on Twitter, but look, if you ban that, then look, there's certain music we can't talk about, there's certain jokes we can't tell,
okay,
and there's and you know what, it's not going to change anybody's heart. That's a lot of things I understand. Chuck D is coming from the most sincere part, you know, saying, because if anybody is to be given that level of grace and I understand the sincerity that he is trying to project here, but I'm sorry, you know, if it's the same thing like when we talked about, you know, the ableist language. I mean, no, it's not the same thing. I'm gonna take that back. It is not the same thing, because there really is a situation to where when it's, you know, Black people talking to each other. I'm sorry, it is different, but
yeah, it is.
You know, it's just like on this show when we weren't as censored as we are now.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I would never say it on this show, even if I was reading something or I was quoting somebody, just because, like, even though I know Lone knows better, I don't ever say the N-word in front of white people, even if they know better, because I view it just like the same reason I don't cuss around little kids. Because I know it's in my heart, I kind of know it's wrong. And I don't want to have to explain why I'm doing something wrong to little children. That's why I don't say the N-word around white people. Because I don't say it
because I don't want anybody to feel comfortable enough to say it back to them.
That too. But I'm in hip hop spaces a lot. If there's one white person in the back of the room, that's why I never say it on stage.
I've never heard you say it on stage.
Yeah. That's I mean, because, you know, I'm usually standing next to somebody white, you know, on Tuesday nights. So
often, yeah.
You know, another white person that knows better. But yeah. Still, I do not want to give anyone the accidental license to think it's okay. But I'm sorry, but when I feel like I am in Black spaces and I am amongst people, and sometimes that's how I feel when I'm on Twitter, even though I know that's not true. Yeah, no, I still want to be. I try not to retweet it or quote it or as much as possible. But sometimes the joke is that good, or what somebody said.
You're talking about a lot of content disappearing,
you know.
Brother.
And so I'm sorry. Like, I understand where Chuck is coming from, because if we stop saying it, we feel like white people will stop saying it. And I just know better than that. If we stop saying it, white people are still going to do what they want to do.
He says, then we know things are pointing in an equalized direction. Then you can convince Zuck to do the same thing at IG, Facebook. get it out of here. Suspend them. It's bad as a symbol.
Well, you know that then, because you know what, who would benefit the least from that?
Who is that?
Black creators.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because say, look, if I put up an old Richard Pryor clip and try to put it in the context of something that's going
different
on today,
it's different though.
Yeah, but then who is policing that?
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to give white gatekeepers the ability to police black speech.
Censor. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't want Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk to say, well, you know, Chuck D told us to do this. And once again, I think Chuck D is coming from a sincere and real place.
I agree.
But I just don't think it's realistic.
Terry, you got anything else to add on to what you said?
It's just bigger fish to fry at this point. It's kind of like when, everybody knows what happened in 2020. Everybody had a lot of black guilt. You know what I'm saying? So everything was
white guilt.
White
if
guilt.
You will.
Yeah.
I know you was going.
Was to appease. And a lot of things happened that we didn't necessarily ask for. One of those being Aunt Jemima being erased from the pancake mix. And
Uncle Ben had Uncle Ben was catching it bad.
Yeah, they all took L's based on white guilt that black people really wasn't tripping on. So when it comes to this particular situation, I honestly don't have a... I don't have an answer for you. I can't say yay or nay on that one.
I feel
where he's coming from, but there's no way to police who's saying it. So if you can't police who's saying it, then it's kind of hard to just erase it altogether. I mean, he has lyrics with those words in it or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Says it a lot.
There's a lot. So.
I won't say he says it a lot.
Well, not a lot, but it's in there. It's in there.
He said it.
He said it enough, and I'm not faulting him for it at all. But it's one of those slippery slopes
where it's definitely in there.
If you're going to police it or just remove it altogether, I don't know, man.
I know it's hard as in the right place. We know that.
I just want the people that ain't supposed to say it, don't say it. How about that?
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And the thing is, you know who's not supposed to say it. And you when you're somebody who's not supposed to say it, you know when you're... You just say it because you want to see what you can do. You know, I mean, and once again, almost basically every white person knows better. But there's always somebody who's like, no, I'm a part of hip-hop. I got a lot of black friends. I was like, look.
Well, a lot of that, too, is idiots giving them a pass to do it, too.
I don't know who these... Negroes are who have decided that they're going to give passes out.
They be out here shucking and jiving. Y'all remember what was old girl, the white chick that used to rap,
like
Priyashawn. Remember her and her buddy?
Oh yeah,
what was her buddy? They used to say the N word a whole lot.
It was, they called themselves the white girl mob or whatever,
something like that.
Yeah, it was something. Yeah,
but she would have videos with black chicks and dudes saying, we gave her a pass. She cool with us. No. You don't, you know what I'm saying? You're not the gatekeeper for that.
Jump in, Lon. I would just say this
for any white person who feels like they have been given a pass. Look, I don't say the N-word in front of black people. I don't know.
Right.
Because, you know, everyone, it's messed up depending on where you are, and who you have a relationship with. Your relationship with that word might be different. So I would say to any white person, okay, say you got a pass in your little neighborhood in Oakland. Would you go to the south side of Chicago and say it?
I would hope
not. Would you go to East St. Louis and say it?
On that block.
Would you go to Brooklyn and say it in front of black people you don't know? So I would say if you would not say it in front of black people you don't know, don't say it at all.
Jump in, Long. What are your thoughts?
I mean, this isn't really my place to have any type of an opinion.
But since
you're asking, what I would say is quite simply to Jay's point and kind of Terry's point and everybody's point is, one, black people are not a monolith, right? Meaning that just because one black person is cool with you saying that as a white person doesn't mean that everybody is. And if you're going to say it as a white person, I hope you understand like the implications behind it. I hope you understand the history behind it. And to be honest, if you're saying it, you probably don't quite take it as serious as maybe you should.
Right.
There's no reason to say it as a white person. I know it feels like this weird double, I'm looking in the camera. It feels like this weird double standard because there's no, there's no word that like black people can say that can offend white people in that manner.
Cause people used to try to say
there isn't though.
Yeah. They used to try to say,
it was a
Ritz. But I mean,
yeah, but it's not. It's not.
It don't hit the same.
It does not hit the
especially
same.
Especially
as a white person, I'm telling you, there is no word.
Yeah,
there's no word that has any type of meaning towards that.
It's not.
But now they tried to say Karen.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't say Karen. It's the same as the N word. No, it's not.
There are black Karens too, and they're
absolutely.
They're Karens of all different nationalities Karens. And races. And
would you say Terry?
They're just more white ones.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah. And that don't
with
even
that
hit.
Specific haircut,
and that still don't hit like you know.
We have that emoji in our Discord. That's a plug.
Yeah.
But what I would say, but no, I just I don't know. Just as from a white person, I just don't feel like there's just no need for it. And you know, if you hear it in a song, don't say it. It's not hard. You know what I mean? Like I commented on. Did you hear about that quarterback in Florida or something who got his scholarship revoked or whatever? Like,
no, I missed that one.
No, I saw
I missed that one.
Yeah, he was singing along to some song with that had the N-word in it, and he said it, and it was on video, and they took a scholarship away or something.
What?
But the interesting thing about the story was that he was like, I understand. He actually took accountability for it.
That's a mature response.
They were still, of course, in the comments, you know, my Uncle Greg, which I don't really have, but you know what I mean. You know, you got the Gregs and the Joannas and the Karens out there and all that stuff. They're just like, oh, this is horrible and blah, 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 blah. And there are even some black people in there that were saying, you know, that's a little extreme. I
see what you did there. I see what you
did. I feel like that's an interesting take because, like, he was singing along to it. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it is weird for white people, for some white people. It is weird for... I accept the fact that maybe I'm a little bit of a have a different viewpoint on this for just because of my background and understanding that I have. But
you definitely do.
But it is kind of weird, you know, like that there's a word, especially if you don't believe in censorship, that there's this one thing that you can't say, or there's
let me do it,
or there's this, you know, there's other words that you can't say, you know, that are whatever. Like if you feel like you should be able to say every cuss word, look, I wrote papers on this in college and stuff like that, you know, like and. You know, I was super strong that you should be able to say everything. I still never said that word.
Right.
But I still kind of felt that way. So I understand the weirdness around it, but there's just no reason to say it. There's just no reason.
I had no idea.
Just let it go. It's not a fight to win, to battle. It's
the wild thing is, it's the one thing that black people can do in this country that white people can't.
I believe Terry
said that. We've said that on the show.
Like, you know, because a white person will get canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For saying it on stage, and a black comedian will wind up being able to take private planes everywhere he goes if he says it on stage. And that's got to be infuriating for some white people. Because it's like,
there's one word.
Because that's the one thing that we're not going to look. The thing is with language and black people and the way we communicate, look, we're not going to get reparations. Even though I say peace, freedom, and reparations, I know better than that. If we do, it's going to be 100, maybe 200 years down the line when people have evolved their mindset to
it's not
going to
happen.
I heard California's trying.
There's going to be too many people that's butt hurt about it.
Because I'm on a federal level. Let's just say on federal. A federal level.
I heard that. I mean, not to take away from, but I did hear that California.
Oh no, no,
is
no I did.
Trying.
I see that is
like $200,000 or something.
$200,000.
Run me my bread.
Run me that.
That's state level again.
That's state level, not federal.
I got some background in Cali.
Might have to move out of state for a little.
Hey, so
Mike could.
But you know, like honestly, sometimes our only agency is the fact that we're able to say things that nobody else can say, and especially in a way where it is pertaining to entertainment.
Yeah.
And we're able to make a way out of no way through our language and through the way we communicate.
Good times.
And that's pretty much the thing is, if somebody white tried to communicate and entertain in that same way, they're getting them out of here, at least for a little while. You know, because there's always forgiveness for white people who say
always. But most
I mean,
of the time.
You know.
Oh, dude, Kramer ain't bounced back.
Kramer. He's apologized.
I mean, he's been on Curb Your Enthusiasm. I saw.
That's because he wanted to get him on there to talk about
but that's
it.
Exactly.
I saw Dog the Bounty Hunter on something, and he's still.
What you just say, Long? Say it again.
I said that we know who. Curb Your Enthusiasm is.
Thank you.
And then I remember Paula Deen said some wild stuff, and I look up and she's on Celebrity Family Feud.
So her dishes went on sale.
Yeah.
Well, this is your pot and pan set for
you
the
know,
cheap.
How much percentage was they off?
Hey, it was marked down about 70. 70%.
I think another thing to kind of maybe approach this angle from like a white person's perspective is don't look at it as a like a tick for tat type thing.
Right.
You can't look at this. You can't look at not saying the N word as like, oh, well, what's the word that black people can say? Or what's the word that, you can't save to Chinese people or Korean people. It's not how it works. It you know, it's like, it's more nuanced than that, because mm-hmm. there's so much more in our society that aligns in general against black people in America and black people in general, from just a standpoint of, you know, man, I really wish that, or I want equality. It's not an equality thing. And that,
look, of course, I don't speak for all black people, just like whoever is giving out N-word passes in Oakland to the white girl gang or whoever does not speak. But I was like, what if we gave, what if we were like, all right, white people, you can say it, but you just have to make everything right from when you were redlining. You just have to make if you give every descendant of a slave in America, you cut them a check,
just and, like that episode of Atlanta. Did y'all see that episode?
Yeah. So then, okay, we'll let you say it as long as we make everything that was in the, and the people are like, nah, we'll just.
But
then,
well, second but thought, I don't think I'm
we'll
gonna
just,
go that far.
All right, we'll just stop saying it.
Yeah, but, I don't want to go that far.
Yeah,
we'll just keep saying it in private.
All right, man. Lone, can we shout out? We shout out our partners real quick.
Oh, my God.
Thanks to our partners. Dr. Coleman of Coleman Dental is our go-to dentist. He's a longtime Indianapolis arts and music supporter located right in Broad Ripple. Printfinity is a screen printing shop based in Indianapolis, owned and operated by our own DJ J. Diff. Our good friends at Indy CD and Vinyl operate one of the best record stores in North America. Shop new and used in their site or visit them in person. And the best way to support the New Old Heads is to visit our Patreon and become a member for as little as $3 a month. All details on newoldheads.com.
Shout out to our partners. We appreciate the partners as always. Shout out to the chat as well. Sorry, we were talking.
Micah's barking orders.
Not at all. But yeah, we appreciate the partners as always.
Micah always practicing for when he have kids.
Is that what that is?
I think it is, man.
I mean, well, I got
friends. We ain't none of your children.
I got friends that have kids, so I soak up data just in case. You know what I'm saying? All right. You're doing a good job, man. You're doing good.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know some more out there that's actually taking care of business, so we appreciate
that. Ain't no other way. To your point, I actually know more good fathers than I do bad.
I do, too.
Well, that's the thing.
Maybe you just don't know that they're fathers.
No, but it's... No, but
like, how many kids you got? Like, I don't know.
We all know the cliche saying. It's, I know people that... You know, the saying is people want props for being a dad. I'm like, all the good dads I know just take care of business and come home every day. It's a late entry, but
and you shut the fuck up.
Oh, you didn't cut it. You didn't chop it up again. Oh. All right, man. Let me.
You keep talking, man, and you shut the fuck up, huh?
Yo, why do I did this to myself?
Yeah, you did. You really did.
I did this to myself.
I hope y'all can hear
that. It was coming,
man. Huh? He's been searching for it for years, so I'm glad I could help, huh? Bro.
I need that to be my chime when somebody texts me.
Huh?
Yeah.
I'm just laughing because, you know, I actually spent time with him, man, and it's funny because it's so accurate. Like, that's definitely him. I don't care who you are. But yeah, man.
Quit name dropping Dick Gregory, man.
I got you,
yeah,
man.
I mean,
that's,
you know,
that's,
Jesus.
Oh, okay. Oh, guy, hey, did you ever meet Dick Gregory?
I did. Man.
Okay, that's yeah. That,
you tell know. Us about the whole story so we can just get this.
Guess
out
who had dinner with Dick Gregory?
I'm telling you, man. That's my guy. I ain't gonna stunt though. I'm gonna be.
Oh, you're not gonna stunt like you've been doing the whole thing.
Yeah,
that's my dude. Though. That's my guy, man. Hey, that's the one person I'll be half fake stunting about, man. I was just lucky because you don't get to talk to people like that often.
Nah,
so I was lucky.
I told
bro.
You, that's my spirit animal.
Yeah, he's that guy. But let's look at a tweet from DJ Quick. All right, I'm gonna make sure my contacts is right because we need to read.
Yeah, read all the words.
Yeah, I'm gonna
make just hyper focus on his reading.
All right, so I'm about to lock in. All right, so here we go.
You have to take a deep breath.
What was that? Oh, that's on that. That's on that. What's that where he's laughing?
Basketball, about? What's his name?
Oh, man.
Play for the Bulls and.
Never mind. Yeah, that's when he was like.
He had to take it. Ron Harper. He had to
that
take
was
it.
After Ronnie.
They put him on TV like that.
A little over?
Huh? Played a long.
Go ahead and take your breath, man.
Played alongside him.
Read the quote.
All right. He said, I know it's early, but I deserve to be where Dr. Dre is. I don't think it's fair, but I understand why. I've never had a machine behind me. That always hurt my friends more than it did me. So Quick is pretty much saying I should have been up there with Dr. Dre, but he had a little extra push, little extra support, hey, little extra, you know.
Sometimes we jump out the window.
Here's my thing, though.
It's true.
With DJ Quick, he definitely is a pioneer, first of all. One of my favorites.
He's an awesome producer.
And he's an incredible producer and should get more peace.
He's a composer. I'll give him that.
He's a composer. He's a better musician than Dr. Dre.
He knows how to play instruments. Yeah.
To me. He's better as
musician,
a musician.
I'll give him that.
He's a better musician.
He's not a better DJ than Dr. Dre.
No, but as a musician, he's better.
But let's even take it away from comparing the two.
Okay, right. Cool. But just for what he's saying as it relates to, because they both OGs and they both legends.
Yeah.
We agree with that, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
All right. So when he talks about, you know, him having a machine, I look at it from this standpoint. It's just my opinion. Dre has put out heat from the 80s. Pretty much all the way up until, I mean, it's cliche to say now, but he's kind of been tucked under in the background. We can count the Compton album.
Dre kind of created his own machine, though, but keep going.
That's what I was getting to. What I'm saying is the machine that I think Quick is speaking about, Dre developed that through consistent heat and making consistent, high-quality
product.
We're
having a request to read the rest of the tweet.
That's all it was. That's all I had.
There's actually three tweets.
Oh, there's two more?
Yeah.
This is the only one that somebody sent me. I didn't know there was two more.
Yeah, let me look that up really quick while we do this.
Okay. Yeah, I only got that one.
To put it in context. Like,
I'll pull it up.
But I like what you said. Like, let's not do the tit for tat because they both OGs and they both legends. But as it speaks to the first portion of the tweet that we have, and like you said, Terry, with the machine, I look at the machine as Dre built that and earned that through hard work and consistent high-quality product.
He put artists on,
right?
There's a few factors involved in there, like with DJ Quick, and I'm not taking anything away from DJ Quick.
One of my favorites.
He's a solid producer.
No, he's better than solid.
I mean,
he's better than solid.
That's a tit for tat answer too, though. I mean, honestly,
there's a lot of people who barely solid. And right, he is solid.
He's solid. He's great, solid as a rock. There's a whole song called that.
Terry had a whole conversation about what his solid means a while ago. Do you remember
that? Sorry, man.
Remember?
I got offended. Yeah. I got offended. I'm sorry. Go ahead, bro.
DJ Quick. I mean, he's produced for Tony.
Yeah.
He's produced for. See, it escapes me. I can't go through all who he's produced.
Everywhere.
He's everywhere.
I mean, you can say Second to None and second, AMG and right. Player Ham.
So the difference between them and Dr. Dre's credentials is the people that Dr. Dre spearheaded and went on to become successful pioneers on their own.
I agree.
With his push.
I agree.
DJ Quick doesn't have that.
As much as I love AMG and them and High C, it's not Eminem, Snoop, Kendrick, 50 Cent.
Ice Cube.
Yeah, like you gotta understand.
Like literally every one of those artists have classic albums.
We're talking about Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Dr. Dre's family tree, as we talked about or alluded to before, is unmatched. You're not going to beat that. We just talked about Belichick. If you put Dre at the top and do all the branches, you're not going to beat that. I don't care who it is.
When did we talk about Belichick?
Weren't we talking about?
Oh, no, I said his coaching Bill tree Belichick is coaching trash.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Hey. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
See?
Y'all finished or y'all done?
I wish you had that.
Smooth Hooter said Dre had Snoop, Quick had Sugar Free. And Sugar Free is that dude on the West Coast.
No,
and on the West Coast, he's that dude.
Sugar Free put out a record this year that I love. That is
Smooth Hooter is right.
It's about Kanye West, who we're not going to talk about anymore. But
man, we just did.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. No, but we didn't. But at the same time, I mean, because I like Sugar Free, and I don't even know if Quick did it, but I was aware of it, but. Did any of y'all know about the Sugar Free album, a Sugar Free record that came out this year?
I didn't know anything about
Brown
it when it came out this year.
I didn't even know about Sugar Free until this year.
Really?
Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Wow.
And it was only because like a clip popped up and I thought he was like E-40 hilarious because of how he rapped.
You see when he was doing the beat with the pen on the table and stuff back in the day?
It was like knowing how he consumes things. I can see that.
See, I'm hip to him because my West Coast family... It's from Pomona. That's where Sugar Free is from. So I would get hit to him when I would go out there and they would kind of, hey, you heard Sugar Free. You know what I'm saying?
I'm also somebody who has admittedly not ever really been up on
West Coast
Bay
West Coast.
Area stuff or anything in that area. A lot
Mac
of West
Dre,
Coast.
Stuff nah, like that. Nah. Yeah.
Bay Area is about 8 hours away from there.
Well, he sounds like he's from the Bay in my kinda. Opinion. I mean, just the way he
got
raps.
That twang.
He's got that style. You know what I mean? But I like what he, don't get me wrong. Like I like what I hear from him because I think it's hilarious.
It is pretty funny.
But you know, but I have the other two here. Here, let me read the rest of these. So,
Thank you, sir.
So you read, I know it's early, but I deserve to be where Dre is. I don't think it's fair, but I understand why. I'd never had a machine behind me. That always hurt my friends more than it did me.
Right? That's the one. Yeah, we just talked about that.
So the follow-up tweets are, my friends have come to me in confidentiality to say, do your music like you want to. Just be DJ quick. People love that. Shh. This doesn't need... And then he goes on and says, this doesn't need to be on a podcast because because you have fire starters who want to spin everything to get more ratings. But the truth is, I love Dr. Dre like a big brother, one I never had. It pains me when people pit us against each other. So,
Which we just said we didn't want to do. Yeah, I don't think anybody's really...
I think it's easy. I think it's really, really easy to do that. I think it's super easy to do that because
I've never personally did it.
Because we associate Quick with the West Coast music.
I mean, his first song was Born and Raised in Compton. So you have to realize
it had a sample of an NWA record.
Come on. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I mean, but I think naturally people like to just compare.
For me as a producer, those are the two names that I think of when it comes to West
and
Coast
Battlecat.
Production and Battlecat. Yeah. Those three names automatically pop up in my head when I think West Coast production.
Nah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? So
an early Daz.
He deserves to be in that conversation, but you know, for that first portion, I'm glad he, you know, cleaned it up and saying he's not hating on Dre, because I know they cool, but
I didn't even take it as him hating.
I didn't either.
But it's good to see the extra parts is what I'm saying. That's good. But no, Quick is definitely deserves to get his flowers, but I just think when it comes to the machine, yes, the machine aided him, but he had a lot to go into making that machine.
I think the thing with Quick is that his record and his discography, which we haven't even went through Quick yet, have we?
I got it pulled up, actually. I just pulled it up.
But we haven't went through it yet, have we?
Nah, no, we ain't made it to him yet.
But when we talk about it, we haven't done Dre yet. And we did do Battlecat, and Battlecat scored super high, if I remember correctly, right? He might be second on our entire list so far.
He had a lot of stuff in there in those later categories where he was exceptional.
And I know that Quick is going to be up there too.
Agreed.
So I say this to say, Quick has a super extensive catalog, worked with a lot of people, not only in the mainstream, but also in underground and probably multiple genres. I don't know about that aspect.
Janet Jackson, Tony.
Because he's so musical with everything. Right. I do think that he's probably correct about I don't know about the I deserve to be where somebody is, but as far as talent level is concerned, if we're going to base it just on talent, I could probably agree with that. The only thing is
doesn't bother me a bit.
We should all know at this point in time that talent isn't the thing that propels people to those stages, right?
Which exactly. Right.
And so
we've
like
I heard the story of Earl Manigault, you know what I'm saying?
And Dr. Dre knew what he was doing in that aspect. He went out, he saw Eminem, he signed Eminem. Would Quick have signed Eminem?
Right.
I don't know.
Snoop,
probably not. You know, like
the Dog Pound,
you know,
Nate Dogg. I mean, these are all people under Dr. Dre.
And we're talking about that. This isn't even talking about the Denon Porters, the DJ High Techs that came on his production team.
DJ Khalil.
And like these are. Dre, I think, just had a different type of mindset and a different type of push to be a part of that machine, you know, and I think because Dre is who Dre is why Dre is who Dre is and why Quick is who Quick is, but I don't think it has anything to do with talent, but we all know the talent isn't enough.
No, it's not. I agree. If we living in the epitome of that era. It's not about that. Go ahead, Jay.
I don't even think it's eras. I don't think it's ever been that way across the existence of time. Not fantasize about it. I think we just want it to be the case.
I disagree because I think earlier on there was a less access to stuff that wasn't as good or wasn't as quality as the good stuff, and the A&Rs filtered through all the stuff that we didn't get a chance to hear and focused on the talent. I think the talent rose to the top and was more important in the 90s, way more than it is now. Because we didn't get a chance to hear, you know, a lot of the trash or the stuff, whatever you want to call it, on the internet. The A&R sifted through all that, and everything was based off the highest quality product, who has the dopest stuff, and that was pushed to the front.
I disagree only because I feel like they found people that had talent that they could market. And I feel like this people that are super talented that they can't market, they will ignore. as a, in the day and age right now.
You're talking about back then.
I'm talking about
period.
Period.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's what it is. Can you market it? Can you market it? It's easy to market the Jackson 5. It's easy to take out Michael Jackson out of that. Obviously, he's talented, right? I agree that, yes, talent has a role in it. But I think it's always been, who can you market? Who can we get the most eyes in front of that is going to take my investment into this and propel it up even higher, because that's just what it is.
Even when you think about like Stevie Wonder, I mean, you got to think somebody that's blind, knows how to play the harmonica and all kinds of instruments. They sound him immediately when he was a kid.
True.
Yeah.
And he's been out here doing it because he was marketable.
Yeah.
You got this blind kid.
Little Stevie Wonder.
Yeah. That knows how to play the harmonica and can sing.
And I don't think that what you're saying is false. I just think that it's always been there. I think it's always been an underlying feature. And I think it, across the board, I think it's always this.
I mean, you know, just like I do.
We can go back to like Nikola Tesla and Einstein. You know, like Tesla was the genius. Einstein took the idea and knew how to market it in the way to make money off of it.
I get what you're saying. Like I said, I get where you're going. It's just
a lot of early American things.
There are a lot of conversations that have become cliche. You know, it's easy to say, oh man, back in the day, it was more about talent. You know how we hear that just through casual conversation?
Agree.
So the reason I'm saying that is because I get what you're saying. Like, we're understanding each other. It's just now the oversaturation now just makes me move further away from that and more towards just the marketing. Like, I think when people look at an artist now and they're like, okay, let me see what this kid is doing, I don't think they say, okay, he's talented.
You
I
think
can
the percentages
him.
Have switched a little
I
bit.
I think it's switched. It's dramatically switched. It's
Dre
now,
has got, at agree. The end of the day, Dre has gave the game more than DJ Quick has given.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
This is also, you know, when they
but
say,
you get what I'm saying, Long?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
It's like now it's like, okay, so they got 1 million views. Let's start there and then we'll figure out the talent.
No,
later.
I think
that's the era.
I think
we're
if
in
we're
now.
Looking at it on a scale of talent versus marketability or whatever that marketability is going to be in whatever era we're in.
Right.
I feel like it's always been skewed towards the marketability aspect. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, to your point, yes, I do. I would agree that talent is much less important now.
That's all I'm saying.
Not for sure, but yeah. But it's always kind of been like this, I guess.
I like the concept.
That's my perspective.
No, I like the concept. I see where you're going. Jump in, Jack.
No, it's just like, I guess the thing that stands out to me is when he says the machine.
Yeah.
You know, because
what is said
machine? You got to understand what Interscope was before Death Row and Dr. Dre's talent push. Like, I think one of the, probably their biggest hit up to that point was Gerardo, you know, Rico Suave. It wasn't like Interscope is
Don't
was
do that.
Interscope
Don't do that.
Before Death Row came along.
You're right. And okay. Then they had Nine Inch Nails and somebody else.
But still, when you talk about hip hop and what a machine is, it right. wasn't that. And then even when you, you know, and at one point, like, you know, Jimmy Iovine was like, yeah, they were telling people that they should drop Dre, you know, and then Eminem came along. You know, and even if you want to go to the beginning, when it was Ruthless Records, okay, yeah, you could say that was a machine. But you know what the biggest thing on Ruthless Records was before N.W.A. and all the stuff that Dr. Dre did? It was the California Raisins. You know, so
that's tough.
The machine, if you're going to call it that, was there because of Dr. Dre.
Exactly.
In both those situations.
To Terry's point, that's what we were talking about.
So, yeah. I mean, I get what he's saying because when you see him standing next to, you know, this is almost 10 years ago, when he was standing next to Tim Cook at Apple when Beats by Dre, you know, it just seems like, oh, Dre just has all these breaks. But, you know, those breaks. You can say whatever you want to say, and everybody wants to say, you know, and of course, a successful.
And this is no knock on Quick.
And you know, and the thing is, I would tell anybody, you know, not that a little bit before Dr. Dre 2000, or not Dr. Yeah, the Dr. Dre 2001 album came out. You know, not that maybe six, maybe months, maybe a year. Rhythmalism by DJ Quick came out, which was a fantastic record, and like I think,
but
it
was
slept
not,
on.
It was not 2001.
It certainly was, it sure not, was not. But you know what? I mean, I can say to people, if you don't know what we're talking about, what we talk about, Dr. Dre and DJ Quick in the same breath, sometimes, even though we just
got
to give it to Dre over Quick.
Got to.
You know, Rhythmalism was a great record that did not get the recognition it deserved.
You have to say, too, when 2001 came out,
yeah, okay,
the way it sounded, it was a lot crispier than anything that ever came out up to that point.
Oh, Doctor, that album sounded good in my terrible speakers. Yeah. I was like it. I had the CD, but of course this is a certain time we only had a tape player, so I dub it.
I mean, he's from the Moore household, so
I mean, you know, I didn't have a CD player. You know, we had, you know,
they only had Maxwell cassette dub tapes.
And so when I was in there making my tape, I had to go ahead and adjust it differently.
Yeah.
Than I did. You know, even if. Like, even when those Death Row albums were Dre didn't do the bulk of the production, you could tell which songs were mixed by Dre. Mm-hmm.
This is probably stupid, but when 2001 came out, Lone, you may be able to attest or tell me I'm an idiot. I was an idiot. But when 2001 came out, I used to listen to that album in my car, and I would, any of my little beats I was trying to make or trying to work on, I made the mistake. Well, not the mistake, but I used to try to, okay, let's play 2001 real quick. Okay, boom, put my CD in, ooh, my burnt CD, and then sit back and listen.
Yeah, you can't make it like
and
that.
And it was...
Got your feelings hurt a few times.
Bad. Like, I was sitting there, and I'm like,
that's how you should have done it, though.
Yeah, but it's, I used to sit there and be like, I'm nowhere near, it's not even close. But I kept doing that to see how he has certain thing paying.
Well, that's how you get better.
Dre was 20
that's
years in the game better. By then.
You also have to realize that 2001 changed how people mix records, too.
True. Yeah.
Like, that was revolutionary in how they mixed records. So yeah,
that was a standard
True.
After that album came out.
For sure. But I think that, to your point, I mean, I've literally mixed records in the past like that. Like, I wanted the last Hinks Jones album we did, I wanted it to have a roots how I got over type of vibe to it, feel to it.
That's a ooh.
So I mixed our first record off of a couple, based it off of a couple roots records. And then I mixed the rest of the records off of the first two records and kind of went down the line. So.
I heard Dr. Dre say one time, because this is back when, to Lone's point, when it was so, the quality was so exceptional. People were asking him about the album and, you know, mixing process and that type of stuff.
It wasn't just him.
Let's
throw that out there.
True. You're right. True. But he said one thing that always stuck with me when I was younger was he said, with my music, when I mix it and I'm doing the mastering, he's like, when I turn it down low and just sit and listen, I can still hear everything.
You should be able to. Yeah. You should always mix low.
Still hear everything.
Always should mix low.
Yeah. And I know, you know, because you've engineered way more than I have, but he's like, yeah, if I turn it down low, it still sounds good. I can still hear everything.
Yep.
And I started doing that. Like, let me turn it all the way down, because in our mind, we want to hear it loud so it booms and bangs. But in all actuality, that's not the setting every time you listen to music. Sure. Might be in a whip, might be around the crib. So when he said that was... I mean, it just goes to the...
He literally set musical standards.
Facts.
Yeah.
And I can't say the same thing about DJ Quick. So, and that's not being a slight on DJ Quick.
Not at all. Not at all.
But Dr. Dre literally set standards.
The one thing, I think the one missing piece that Quick, I would say, probably doesn't have... And again, I don't want to pit these guys against each other, but the one thing that where Dre stands out to most people that have the crazy career as Quick as has had... And is continuing to have, and why Dre still kind of put on top of that, isn't just the machine. It's also because he has a little bit of that Diddy and Puff in him as well.
What do you mean when you say that?
Or Diddy Puff / Khaled is what I meant.
Oh, God.
And I only mean that from the angle of being a music producer and putting the entire product and putting the whole product together, putting everything together.
Not just being a beat maker.
Not exactly. And this is not to take anything away from
that's
Quick.
That's not to say that that's just
Quick.
What,
is the ultimate
He's done full projects before with people, you know, underground people that I've done.
I mean, he mixed All Eyes on Me in like 2 weeks.
So, but what I'm saying is like... The only reason that Diddy and Khaled can even be brought up in a conversation like this is because they were able to mass produce market on such a high level. You know what I mean?
I would agree.
Dre can do what they do, but also do what Quick does. And that's what makes him that much more bigger in this machine. That's really the only difference. Because if we're going to go down straight to just beats and production styles, I'm giving it to Quick personally.
I'm so glad you said that.
But
I'm still giving it to Dre.
I'm probably going to give it to Quick.
I'm glad you said
that. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that he, again, this is a producer's ear. He plays a lot of original stuff, and he's got
a lot of original stuff.
He's got this extra funk in him that's in him.
I'm so glad you said that. That's not
Parliament.
I think about the transition from NWA Dr. Dre.
Okay.
To Death Row Dr. Dre.
Right.
Okay.
And how the first Chronic sounded, how Doggy Style sounded.
Okay.
How, even though he didn't produce a whole bunch on this album, but dog food sounded.
He mixed that, so.
Yeah. It's just like he set standards and his production style evolved. And I don't know. It's just a sound.
I think part of me as well is that I don't really know what Dre has actually produced in the last two decades. And I do know the things that Quick has produced because he's even produced records with Thurs, like, true, that are super dope. And true. So, like, I don't know, man. I just, as a producer, he has more legs to me than Dre, well, because I feel like Dre hit his stride.
What has Herbie Hancock and what has Quincy Jones produced in the past 20 years, though? Yeah. But they're still, if you compare them to anybody, you have to be like, these are top tier.
Yeah.
Producers,
I give
musicians,
it.
You know what I'm saying.
I just give it to Quick based upon his longevity and continuous work. But it's not to take away from Dre and what he's done. Obviously, mm-hmm. he was super out there, but
long, sometimes, you know, us as
producers, he hasn't fallen off, and he's only gotten better, in my opinion. So,
alone as you know, as creatives and producers, sometimes we get surprised when we read the credits and hear certain stories. So, prime example is what's the joint with I should know this. I feel bad. I feel stupid right now. Scott Storch played the lick for
Still Dre.
Yeah.
It's like I saw Dre get on the computer. I mean, on the piano and play it at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's like in my mind when I first heard that, I'm like, Dre sat down at the piano and played these licks out.
Then is an orchestra though?
What I'm saying is
it was actually Scott Storch.
It was Scott Storch. So in my mind, I'm thinking, and this dude, Dre, is a fool. He making this beautiful music, mastering, mixing, mastering, playing all this stuff. But I had to mature and learn and be like, a lot of his stuff is collaborative also, especially on the latter end. He ain't done, but it's hella collaborative. And I'm not mad at that, to your point, because Quincy
is not Kanye West collaborative.
I mean,
it's up there.
Like
it's
later Kanye West stuff.
It's definitely up there. I
wouldn't say it was that high, but it's in the ballpark.
You got to realize, like, he had a production team of like Denon Porter and High Tech and Khalil, and
he was still mastering that stuff, though.
But that's not making the beats. You know what I mean? That's,
but he was instrumental in the instrumentals.
Yeah, but it's the same argument with Diddy. And
it's kind of not, though.
It really is,
but it ain't.
No, it is. It is if he's in the A&R chair saying, oh, like, okay, Khalil, send me 20.
Yep. And then here, let's add this piano.
That's what I'm talking
about. All right.
The difference is Puffy would not sit down and add the piano. Yeah. Khaled would be lost trying to sit down and add the piano. Right. Dre could actually do that.
That's why Dre is always looked in higher regard. That's why we don't talk about Dre in the same realm as Diddy and Khaled. Khaled doesn't even deserve to be talked about, in my opinion. But that's why we don't rank them together, because they did the same thing. But Dre actually can make records,
right?
Yeah. And we know that he can make records from scratch because he's done it.
So when he,
but I just don't think he has that much of a
not like a
foothold, like
not
he
like
did
it used to
in
be
in like the early 2000s, 90s, and 80s.
I mean, but the status that he's at now, he's to the point now where, to Terry's point, when he talks about the mixing and mastering and everything, when you're OG of that status in your ear, you know it when you hear it. So when he asks these guys who are already great to send him a batch, and then it's just like him putting the seasoning on the top of it and then mixing it, he's deserved to be that person, I think, at this point, because he's already has the credibility as an actual producer.
For sure.
You see what I'm saying?
Look,
I'm not even mad at that. I'm just saying, like, that's the difference between him and Quick.
No,
100%.
But, you know, 100%. In me, I think about Dr. Dre is just, look, he basically did Above the Law's first album. And when I think about the second NWA album, which I think is, even though thematically it is reprehensible, sonically.
Nobody was hard.
Hard.
Yeah, but sonically, whoo, Dr. Dre was. And I know
he was in his bag.
I don't know Yella did some of the stuff, but you know that was Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
You know, it's just incredible. If you can just get past.
Always into something.
If you can just get past all the terrible things that they're saying.
Yeah.
Bro, go listen to the DOC first album. You know what I'm saying? Like, and that's. That was a question.
That's
I was
Dre.
Like, that's a question.
All
I was
day.
Like,
nah, yeah. For sure.
Nelly said that the DOC is the biggest what if ever in hip-hop.
I agree.
And I 100% agree.
I agree.
With
yeah.
Is there anybody that we're missing? I can't see anybody that would have been a bigger what if.
I mean, just because of who I am and I like to just stir the pot.
Oh, man.
Kid Hood.
What?
Dude, I don't even know who Kid Hood is.
He was on the Scenario remix. That was the first verse.
Nah.
Kid Hood was about to get him.
He doing too much. He going to 11. Terry, he doing too much now.
Nah. I don't know about that.
Nah. Lone, who are we missing, man? You can go underground.
No, I mean, I'm serious. Like, it really was.
I feel like we know a lot of dope artists that have been on the
DLC
underground.
DLC was instrumental in the Chronic too. He wrote on that album.
The only other what ifs are really, unfortunately, people that have passed away. Like Big L. And I would even throw Nipsey on there because I feel like he was hitting his stride.
Hey,
I like Nipsey. I like Big L.
Victory Lap was crazy.
Victory Lap is an undeniably classic album.
Because right about front to back. Because right about now is when we should have been getting another Nipsey album.
We probably would have been on damn near three by now.
You know, you're right, or at least
an album in a mixtape or so.
Yeah.
I think he'd been like, I ain't giving y'all no mixtapes. You got to buy this.
Yeah. Because he had got nominated for a Grammy.
Yeah.
His foot was on the gas literally. After on Victory Lap.
I mean,
Lone, do you think there's anybody on the underground scene that has not passed? Someone that's still, you know, just something happened where they fell out or they just stopped making music or no. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Cannabis's album wasn't what.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
The DLC's album.
Not even close.
No.
Not even close.
I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to have this conversation about people that still have the ability to do stuff. You know, like
that's fair.
You know, the DLC lost his voice, right? Yeah. You know, Nipsey died. You know,
which goes into
I could say Mac Miller. You know, Mac would probably probably be making incredible music now as well.
That's a good one.
But he at least had a good run.
He did.
Mac had
a really
four
good
or five
run.
Really good albums.
He did.
True.
DLC had one.
That's what I mean. So it's like, but I don't think we can have this conversation outside of people that had unfortunate Blue in Exile. Blue's first album that he put out was amazing.
That's true.
His follow ups have been good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But they haven't been spectacular.
And they call lightning in a bottle.
They did.
And
that's not to take away from Blue. That's not to take away from Blue. You know,
he's still
nice. He's still making good music. But, you know, I'm just using that as an example because they came out so strong and he hasn't been able to keep up that momentum in that kind of hierarchy growth, you know, that we would like to see.
It's almost unfair because he started at such a high.
For sure.
Playing with Exile, like it's hard to get up there to where they were.
I mean, don't get me wrong, and I liked his follow up. I like New York, even though it was super different. I liked the other stuff that he's done. So much work. I like his Crash Knuckles stuff that he did with Turok from Detroit that nobody really knows about. But you know, shouts to them. But I don't know. I just don't feel like this conversation is something that we can really have unless there's like
something really can't
unfortunate.
Think of nobody other than DLC that
I'm trying to
like
think.
That happened
I mean, I remember you know because. I was just, I had so much energy for Yo MTV Raps back in the day. I remember when the DOC was on and they had a whole show called Tragedy of a Lyricist.
Mm. Oh,
you know,
man.
About him losing his voice.
Yeah.
Because they were still shooting videos, you know, for No One Can Do It Better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, okay, well, he doesn't have to promote him live, but we can still promote the record. But it was just like, and you got to understand, DOC didn't cuss on that record.
No, he didn't.
At all.
He didn't cuss on
Here's
that
the crazy thing.
And I mean, it was the hardest record out. He didn't cuss on it. The only cussing on that record was on the grand finale when it, NWA
had NWA on it.
And that was the last appearance Cube made on anything Ruthless related.
Go ahead, Lone. What were you going to say?
I wouldn't even really know about the DOC if it wasn't for this podcast.
Really?
I mean, I have heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I miss the DOC wave, right?
Like, so, I was there in real time, so I understand why that's a conversation.
You know, and the fact that all three of you guys and, you know, so many other people since we've talked about it have mentioned, you know, the DOC in such high regards. I'm like, oh, this must have been a thing. But flew right up. Like, again, I've heard his name, but I didn't listen to anything.
I remember the first time.
So I missed it. So I guess that kind of makes your point, right? That
man, I'm telling you, bro. Like, I remember seeing the Formula video when Dre had the
how he starts that
coat
is
on
and high energy.
Like all of that. And like he was in the lab working on him and all that type of stuff.
Man.
And I remember being like, yo, who is this dude?
No.
Beat was fire. He was going off.
That was fire.
Oh, is that beat?
Yeah.
Okay, I know that beat.
No, I remember when Funky Enough.
Yeah,
Funky
Enough.
Because that was the first single. It Sam was wild.
Silvers.
It was, I see you.
Foster Silvers.
And what's really crazy about him, because he raps that almost in a Jamaican patois. And I heard him tell the story.
That's the patois.
He said, look, man, I ain't gonna lie. I did that song when I was drunk. That's why when you listen to the rest of the album, I don't rap like that for anything else on the rest of the album.
He said that on Funky Enough? That he did that on Funky Enough?
Yeah, he was drunk when he did that.
I've never heard that story.
And then, you know, the next album was the DOC and the Doctor,
yeah,
which had the crazy, like because the video version is a little bit different because it had this crazy guitar interludes and these horns that Dre put in. That was one of my favorite records, videos, everything at that time. And then I think it was the Formula, and then I went my Mind
Formula
blowing.
Was crazy.
Yeah, Mind Blowing.
So yeah, it was just crazy. Like his run,
he had a nice run.
He had. This is the thing when you know everything was. Of course, hip hop has always been very much single based. You know, he had four super strong singles, and the thing is, he probably had two or three more records.
That could have gone as singles.
The whole
NWA Ice Cube situation could have went a lot different if the DLC hadn't been in that accident.
That's a good point.
So,
the Gobernator,
think what side DLC would have been on, you know?
You already know.
Yeah.
The Gobernator says Lauryn Hill just one album, solo album. Nate Jeezy going to be so mad.
Maybe.
Talk to me, Lone.
Maybe. It's hard to have that stance.
She's still here.
She has
the ability.
She had the chance. She just didn't just do it. Yeah, okay. You know, okay. Like,
she just got lazy.
I feel like people wanted it from
complacent.
Her. People wanted it from her for a long time. Imagine if Kanye West would have not rapped after Through the Wire, you know, because of that.
Dropout, yeah.
You know what I mean? It would have been something like
that. That's why people were so excited when she was featured on Nas's album.
Yeah.
Which she killed,
she did
by the
one
way,
verse, and everybody,
fire.
Oh my God, she went off.
Yeah. But I agree. I like the point to. I like the point that you speak to where you say, for the people that are still here, it's on them to continue, you know, or put the effort.
Your DLC couldn't do it.
If we're going to have a conversation about artists we think we don't know why they have bigger.
That's different.
That's a different conversation because there's plenty of artists I'm like, man, they put out quality material consistently and they're not.
You got any off the top right now?
I can say that about Crit. I can say that about Crit.
Crit is at the high level of that.
He's at the high level of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
I'm not saying he's dropped lackluster products, but I'm just saying it seems like
he's not over the top.
Yeah, he should be higher.
He hasn't hit Cole level, you know?
Those were his peers. Well,
no, those were his peers.
Yeah. But Lone, I asked you, did you have any people to kind of come to your mind?
I mean, Chewy from Sacramento, super consistent, lots of dope material. Thurs from LA,
he's dope.
I've never heard a bad Thurs song.
Thurs is dope.
You know who dropped the ball though? What was my guy? The dude that was really in the Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, Charles Hamilton. Charles Hamilton was one.
Didn't he get stolen on by some?
That's kind of what, after that, it was.
Then it didn't help with, like, basically he had stole a record from Black Spade.
Shouts to Black Spade.
Yeah. Like,
I got a story
getting stolen
Black Spade.
Didn't help either, did it?
No, that didn't help.
By a girl.
I remember, dude, he was in that blog era. Like, he was ascending.
And he tried, you know.
And he plateaued and took a deep dive.
What was that
song, what's your boy's name? What's your boy's name?
I mean, there's lots of artists.
What's your boy's name that work with
Mickey Facts?
That's the name I was looking for.
Asher Roth.
Yeah. Asher Roth, yeah, for sure. You know, somebody that we know that I always wanted, and I don't know if he just doesn't, I think he's just doing a lot of different things, but Suleiman, man. Like, why is Suleiman, Suli, why aren't you putting out more records, man? We need more records, man. Suli's super dope.
I sent Suli something probably about 2 years ago, but we got... That's a busy brother.
So he's all over the place, man. But
he sent me a rough draft, but Suli is dope. That's a really good one. You know who else? I'll give you another one that we know. Add two. Now Ad puts out product. Now I ain't saying he don't put out product. No. And every time he pop out, it's immaculate.
His last
joint
was a classic.
Jim Crow the Musical is a classic.
That's a classic album.
That was a great project.
But Ad is also his philanthropy side and the rest of the stuff that he does in the community with his kids and all that. That's a lot.
I mean, this list could be super, super long.
Yeah.
It's like super long, especially.
Because you think, I'm glad y'all said that too, because I had this conversation.
Overdose.
About,
yeah. What happened to them?
I don't know.
Pac Div, yes.
Now that's one that I know. Pac Div had heat.
Pac Div.
I was talking to Pete Sake about Pac Div today. Yeah, they had
Pete
heat.
Sake is another one. Pete.
Yep.
He's another one.
Let's keep working.
Grumpy old man.
I actually wouldn't mind another.
The Lady of Rage.
I talked to Mike about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just checking. I talked to Young Spitz about it.
Bahamadia.
I was like, we need some more.
I actually wouldn't mind another Pete. You and him about due for.
I'd like to, man. I'm in a better place.
I need some more product from you, low key. Since we doing this.
I'm in a better place now than I was when we did our first project. And I was just talking to Mike Spitz about that probably a couple
Travis
weeks
ago. Travis Porter.
Put Lone on the list. I would need some
Travis
more
Travis Porter. Oh, yeah. They were
on that nice little party vibe. Yeah. Yeah. And
just disappeared.
Those, but some of these that you guys are saying is definitely Mickey Fax sticks out.
Pac Did.
Pac Did really sticks out.
I need some more Antifreeze records, man.
Hold on, what was Von P's group? Was that?
Nah, Tanya Morgan.
Tanya Morgan. Yep. Tanya Morgan.
Yeah, they had heat.
Yep.
Yeah, man. One of
Dilla's solo work. Yeah, I think Dilla falls in that category too. I think that's actually good. Dilla would fall in the same category as DLC, maybe.
DLC.
I'd be super curious. But at DLC is. Dilla's got still an extensive amount of
Lord work. Knows what Dilla would be doing right now, though. Bruh, had he not passed. Like, who knows? It'll probably be a whole different swag, and everybody would
and to be honest.
But then you never know. He might be working with BB Rexha.
Here's the thing, man.
We could got a Soul Aquariums album.
Perhaps.
The thing with Dilla is, and this is coming from a huge Dilla fan, I'm super curious if Dilla would have the type of career in life that he's had in death.
Yeah, yeah. Will he have so many children out here if he had not passed away?
I think the children would still be there. I don't know if the success...
I don't know if it would be as extensive,
I think the children would... But I think the children... I'm one of them. We're one of them.
Yeah, but we're one of them that at the same time, like... Don't get me wrong. Like Water for Chocolate was my favorite album in 2004. In 2005, like that,
I was there when you bought it.
I'm saying that was my favorite, and I didn't know it was Dilla.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Once I found out it wasn't until he passed away, because he was super low key. Was an underground producer. You know, he was. His influence would probably be like Madlibs, to be honest.
Good comparison.
It's a lazy comparison, but
it's good though, because Madlib has become more of a. We'll say household, because the phenomenal Gibbs projects and, you know, all the stuff that he's done.
I wouldn't say household.
Well, more than
it's closer.
He's a lot closer. We'll say that to him.
Interesting. What's interesting is that I feel like Alchemist has become more of a household name.
Yeah, I agree
than
with
Madlib.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I feel like Madlib's got more extensive work.
The thing about that with Alchemist actually. It kind of crossed over into that more popular area for a minute before he kind of, I ain't going to say
early
fell
on,
off.
Super yeah. early.
Like, I ain't going to say fell off. He kind of just, you know what I'm saying?
Hold me down. And
went underground for a minute and then came back up again.
The Jada Kiss record.
Yep. So, like he hibernated for a second.
Yeah.
But
Smooth Hoosier said Field Mob. I don't know.
I fool with Field Mob.
Yeah, no, I think they peaked out at Sick of Being Lonely. You know.
That was a good record, though.
I'm not going to front on it, no.
That was a real good record.
Yeah.
Hey, say
any other night. They might be in that
Sick
same.
Sick of Being Lonely was heat, though.
They that might be in the same area as like Famlay and.
At least Fillmore got to put out a record. Famlay didn't even get a whole LP.
That's true.
And you know who? He didn't get an LP, but he was a character on Def Jam Fight for New York.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Conscious Daughters did more.
We didn't talk about.
Oh, you know who else? Boss.
I think Boss pretty much did what she was going to do.
Yeah. That was a good album, though.
That was.
Did what she was going to do.
Some people were here. They were here for a good time, not for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
We had a topic that had 5 votes, and we didn't talk about it.
Uh-oh.
Hit Boy Talks losing millions at his highest point.
Yeah, man. He was on a podcast.
I saw that.
And I didn't even realize. He said in 2012, he says, I had Dumb Bread, which he did, because I remember, we know. Like he started to bubble
the throne,
right?
But he said that's not where the money came from,
right? Because by
his Interscope deal,
right? Mm-hmm. By 2017, he said he was laying on the ground with $0 in his account after having millions balled up like a fetus crying.
Oh, maybe that's why he started doing those MIDI Unison pack commercials on
YouTube. Remember you talking about those the other day
that everybody has seen. Man, if I would have had these when I was a star, I'd be a billionaire by now.
Me and Lone was just talking about this. He said he was in a mansion in Beverly Hills. He said he blew it. Mm-hmm. He said, I was investing in the homies. I was putting up money for everybody around me. And he said, keep in mind, this is back when he was doing Sicko Mode. Like Drake's verse was already recorded. He had been messing with Travis. And he said all that stuff was going on. And he still was looking up and was like, yo, it's no money in my account.
No wonder he worked so hard.
But he did talk about his resurgence. And things that help, especially Nas, the Nas collaborations. But with Hit-Boy, this shocked me, because I thought, And, you know, you hope for the best and say, you know, the producers, they keeping the bread and making sure they do, you know, what they need to do. But it brings up a good point as it relates to these artists and the younger producers when they get the bread, like having financial advisors or having a manager or something like that. Because sometimes we're told as up and coming producers, what you need a manager for? Why do you need a manager? You're not even in the game yet. Just focus on your craft, which can be true because we all know the concept of 10,000 hours. Put your work in. But at some point, somebody's going to have to watch the money and somebody's going to have your best interest. And hopefully that person is someone that you can trust.
Yeah. Mm.
So the fact that he was up that high in 2012 shocked me that he was broke.
It doesn't shock me at all when you listen to what he said, because it was like,
well, he talks about his homies.
No, he's like, you know, because it's a lot of times it's a situation where, hey, big dog going shopping, we all going shopping.
That's true.
Big dog going out to the steakhouse, we all going out to the steakhouse.
MC Hammer syndrome.
You know, and if you ever been in a situation where, like, look, when you just taking, you know, your lady out for a nice little meal
versus the homies,
and you look up,
everybody got filet mignon.
You know, and you look up and you had a couple cocktails and appetizers, you'd be like, $200.
Crab legs is expensive.
You know, you because the homies get to order and stuff this market price.
Yeah,
and you know, and
telling you, them crab legs on the half shell expensive.
Yeah, you know,
it ain't like the homies is in a restaurant being like, no, I don't want to do too much. Let me have you know, a side
especially
salad
especially if you think, okay, I just produce for Watch salad. The Throne.
Appetizers long.
You know, and you're not going to be like, no, we're going to be on a budget tonight. So everybody, no, you can't.
No, we celebrate.
You're like, you can't get the shrimp cocktail and everybody's on a 2-drink maximum.
Yeah.
No, it's like, come on, man, let's do it. We living tonight.
But yeah, it's important, man. Fam was doing so much work.
And he had people living with him and, like, you know, was paying other people bills. I mean, like, it goes.
Kevin Garnett did that early in his career, but he had NBA money.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
Big difference.
Yeah.
The OBF, the Official Block Family. I remember mm-hmm. that.
But man, we talking about a dude that was one of the guys. He had a go-to phase where he still might be that now with all his Nas work. But he talked about with that bread in 2012. I remember that year. Look, he was everywhere.
It's not. It's easy to get rich, but it's so easy to go back to being poor when you are in the music industry. I mean, look.
I mean, it's set up for the artists.
Rick James was rich at one point.
Yeah.
You know, and when he died, you know, he was in an apartment. You know, and I'm not trying to, but that's how, like, you can't think about when somebody's at their height and think, oh, that's just how they live in the rest of their life. A lot of artists, you know, have had to downgrade. They just don't tell you about it because that doesn't look fly on Instagram. It doesn't look fly on Instagram when the hit records dry up and when, you know, you went from doing 10,000 seaters to 1,500 seaters to state fairs.
That's why I respect.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's why I respect rapper Big Pooh so much because the interview when he was talking about, hey, I'm going to be honest with y'all. I had to Uber. I had to do this and this in between projects or in between.
A lot of these rappers didn't have regular jobs.
But I've never heard somebody just be as open and talk about it as freely as Pooh was when he was like, look, I'm going to tell y'all, like, we tasted it. We had it. But in between stuff, I had to do this.
What's his name?
I respect that.
But wrap up?
But they know where
it is. Skills. He talks about having to work regular jobs a lot.
I mean, you got to realize a lot of these rappers, even Pooh, like, even though they were big on the underground, they're not making like lots and lots of money, especially if they're not touring.
But
you know, Little Brother wasn't a group anymore. You know what I mean?
Think about somebody like Capadonna, who had a gold record.
Yeah.
Who was on with Wu-Tang, touring with Wu-Tang, who wound up driving a cab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is what it is. Like, you got to understand, like, and a lot of artists got to look, Dre said it, you know. On, you know, if you don't move your feet, I don't eat, you know, and I'm not saying it as eloquent as he did,
but it's true.
But, you know, you can't act like your highest moment is going to be what you're going to be doing forever.
Right.
Like, everybody is not Prince, Michael Jackson, Usher, true, Beyonce, to where they just keep this thing moving. It's a lot of times, like, okay, you got to look at if I got a platinum record, this is the best I'm ever going to do, and I need to spend my money like that. If I got a hit on Jay-Z and Kanye, I got to make sure this money lasts.
Bruh.
Like, I, you
what'd
know,
you say, long?
I've seen people, like, it's just, it's not a big deal. It is a common thing to see people who were were at the top. They're at all the award shows. You know what I'm saying? They're having every, they're having things. They are
cycle.
They are on the cover of these magazines. And then 5 years later, they couldn't go to any of these award shows if they paid to get in.
Nope.
What were you about to say, Long?
No, like if I ever get a lot of money, I'm going to be very much like Kawhi.
Kawhi Leonard, yeah.
Very much like Kawhi Leonard. Like,
driving his Blazer.
I might get a newer vehicle.
I think he got a Suburban.
Yeah,
I think it's a Suburban.
But I mean, it's the same. Like,
That's him getting NBA money. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Guaranteed contracts.
I
don't even know Kawhi's played this year.
I know what it's like to have a decent amount of money and then to not have money. And when you understand that, then you understand how to move a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so, like, I understand how to move different because I reframed my life intentionally around
something that. You talked about when I first talked about the topic is I heard you mumbled that you said financial literacy.
Yeah.
And how important
the first time, if you don't come from money.
Right.
The first time you get money.
Yeah.
You don't know how to handle it.
You just spend it. You know, even if you think you're saving it, you know, a lot of times you're spending more than, like, the first time I got money, I spent money. Mm-hmm. I bought a house. I bought a car. I bought a pool table. I bought a TV. I bought a TV. That was my housewarming gift to myself when TVs cost $2,000.
Like, come on now.
You know what I mean? So, like, you know, it's, and I thought I was saving money, but I wasn't really. You know what I mean? So, it's just something that either you have to go through or you have to have enough people around you to be able to guide you so you don't screw it all up.
And sometimes you have, I'm not going to say I want this for anybody, but sometimes you got to lose it to realize how to keep it. Like now, you got to understand, in my business, in the hospitality and service industry, like for the longest time I had the mentality that there was going to be another pandemic. So I put up money like there was another pandemic coming. I was going to be out of work for a year. So I'm, you know, between putting money into the market and just putting money away, like if something bad happens again and like there's some kind of, if the squirrel flu comes out or whatever, like I'm ready to. Squirrel flu hit, I'm good. But I'm just saying.
Oh, you stupid.
Like you don't, like a lot of times people don't have that mentality. They just think, okay, we back to work, we getting it and we going to be good.
Yeah.
And you got to understand at any time. There are just market forces that will turn your water off.
The same way, that's the problem with gambling. People gamble, win that money, and then lose it and think they can just keep trying again and trying again. And
them parlays will get you. Them parlays will get you. Be careful out there. Them parlays will get you.
I put a dollar into a certain situation and got $100 back on something I didn't. I was like, well, I should be doing this every night.
Let me put $20 in next time.
Something told 100 me, nights later. Somebody told me put 70 of that away. Yeah. And I'll play with this 30.
Yeah.
Because if I'd have kept that entire 100, I'd have just blown it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, be careful with them parlays out there, y'all. They'll give you a high real quick,
look,
and then you'll be
there's a
you
reason.
You don't want to be on the other side of a dump truck, man.
Look, there's a reason.
Hey, you don't.
There's a reason it's why heavy. FanDuel and MGM, they advertise in all 50 states, even though, like, all this stuff is only, like, legal in like 15, 16
states. You can go to a state.
That's how much money they're making.
You can go to a state where you're not from there, but in your state is legal, and it won't let you place a bet.
No, there. Because it does. You got the GPS in your phone lets you try to hook up a bet in Missouri.
Yeah,
it's not gonna go through.
Not gonna go through. Or Illinois. Not gonna go through.
You thought you won about $50,000. Nope.
Disappointed in
them. Did it before you left.
Nope. You should have set all that up or before you left wherever you was from.
All right, man. Is there anything I missed, man, before we get out of here? I think we about 5 over. We good, Long?
Can you shut the fuck up?
I'm going to shut up then. Make sure y'all go to newoldheads.com. Like, subscribe when you see it, follow, go to the Patreon page, all that. We appreciate the support as always. Shout out to the chat as well, those that hung around with us, we appreciate it. Thanks for the support. We'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Yeah, goodbye.